On a Tuesday night, it is 8:04 Eastern on the 19th of August. Welcome inside the channel. This is the Ravens Collective, and it's edition number 3. I'm Bobby Trossett, joined alongside my co-hosts, Jeff Zerebeck of The Athletic, Cole Jackson of Rogue Raiders. Great to be back with you, gentlemen. And a week from today, we'll have probably, I mean, I don't know if they're going to have it ready for us at 4 p.m. Eastern, the final roster, but at 4 p.m. Eastern, the NFL, along literally across the entire league, these 32 teams got to get their 53-man roster solidified. So tonight is all about projection, anticipation, prediction. And I'm lucky to have you guys by my side for that and a whole lot more. Guys, we are 717 watch hours to kind of peel back the curtain for you away from monetization, which means we're going to be able to give you more content. We're going to be more consistent because of it. So thank you for all your support so far through the first couple weeks. On your way in, like the video, subscribe if you haven't already done so, hit that notification bell, and maybe just maybe a week from today, celebrating the rosters and whatnot, we will have hit monetization through 3 weeks, which I think is a pretty darn good accomplishment. But great to be back with you guys. Cole had the novel idea to start with a little something fun to loosen us all up. And that was comments made on Saturday's broadcast from Rod Woodson, Ravens Hall of Famer, of course, who had this to say, and we'll cut to Twitter just to kind of kick things off, guys, and feel free to chime in. Cole, why don't we begin with you? I mean, Chris Cooper, who's a great follow out there on Ravens Twitter, tweeted it out that he heard on the broadcast that Rod said that Lamar couldn't beat the 2000 Ravens defense. Now, that just isn't any defense. We all know that defense. Maybe the greatest of all time, a championship-winning group, and one that, of course, Rod Woodson was a part of. Well, look whose timeline it hit, Cole. I know you want to start. The baton's yours, baby.
No, I always love when Lamar, it's like Lamar wakes up from a nap on a Tuesday and just decides to go on Twitter and just let loose. I always get a big kick out of it because it'll be days with nothing and then just an afternoon of tweets. And you can just picture Lamar chilling on his couch. But I love these types of topics. And I completely get what Lamar is saying because you can do this. It was kind of like when I remember during COVID when The Last Dance came out and everybody was talking about, the Pistons and the physicality and, you know, how would that hold up today? But now it's a 3-point shooting league. So anytime you're talking across eras, I think it gets really interesting. But for me, when you go back to that 2000 Ravens defense, that front seven, including their defensive line, like there's just not many O-lines that could keep up with the power that they're bringing. And I think what's interesting though, is there was no quarterback back then, you know, like Lamar Jackson. And so they didn't really have to, you know, they were facing mostly those drop back passer types and they just absolutely ravaged them. So I do think it raises an interesting question, but I don't know. I got to lean towards the 2000 Ravens defense. I don't know if it's just the old school mentality in me. It's not to deny the greatness that is Lamar Jackson, but if you're comparing offense to defense, I also don't think the Ravens have the offensive line to stop that Baltimore Ravens 2000 defensive line.
Yeah, I mean, are we talking, what rules are we talking? Because if they played the way the 2000 team played in this current rules, those guys would be getting arrested for how physical they were against opposing offenses. I mean, that wouldn't fly, the clutching and grabbing, the hitting the quarterback. I mean, Tony Siragusa would have been in jail for that hit on Rich Gannon in the playoffs. So, I may come up, you know, I may have the get off my lawn vibe on this one, but you know, it's just impossible to compare the eras. But I'm not taking anybody over the 2000 Ravens defense. That's just how it was. I mean, you're talking about a group with the best middle linebacker in the history of the NFL in his prime. You had the two animals inside that didn't let anyone touch Ray Lewis. You had the bookend pass rushers and McCrary and Bulware, and you had the shutdown corner and McAllister. Man, was that a really good team. I think the Ravens would make some plays on them. I mean, they weren't going to go the Giants like the Giants did in the Super Bowl where they could barely gain a yard. But I'm not taking anybody over the 2000 Ravens defense.
But fellas, if nothing else, is this not like a rare opportunity for everybody on the outside looking in to kind of enjoy this peel back of the curtain, if you will, when it comes to Lamar's competitive spirit with from within. I mean, Rod's obviously entitled to his opinion, and Lamar as an all-time great who will one day be in Canton as well, barring something crazy and unforeseen, has his own side of things as well. So as you can see here, the mentions were let's just say Lamar had time earlier this week, pulling out some gifts, going back and forth with one of his fans here, Jeremy, and then of course to Josh. He's like, look, I like me versus him, meaning Rod, in open space. And as we've seen time and time again, just ask TJ Watt and other all pros over the last seven seasons, he's made them look darn silly in space. So that's how we're beginning tonight. A little primer, if you will. And again, we're so glad you guys can be with us for the third edition of the Ravens Collective. It's roster projection special for you. And I think we should just dive right in. We're going position by position. Let's begin with the elephant in the room, which is, I don't even know if that's the right phrase because it's so obvious what they're doing at quarterback. But Cole, in the doc, you know, you kind of asked the question, has Cooper Rush been disappointing as QB2? A lot of folks felt like he was an immediate upgrade over Josh Johnson, who they had in the building last year. And we know in the past, in this Lamar era, they have carried three. That's not going to be the case, you would think, this year. But has Cooper been a disappointment through two preseason games to you?
I think he has, because he's mostly playing against backup defenses. And, you know, kind of what I saw in the value of paying, I wouldn't say significant money, but paying a decent chunk of money to a backup quarterback, is that if he does, God forbid, have to get into action, because, you know, obviously number eight's quarterback one, undisputed, will never change. And I want, you know, 20 games of a healthy Lamar Jackson. But if Cooper Rush does have to get in there, whether it's to get you out of a game, get you through a two game stretch, you know, I felt like, you know, we're going to pay someone. I want to see a good performance out of them, even if it's in a game manager role, because obviously they'd pivot to a Derrick Henry, you know, heavy approach. But Cooper Rush in the past has been able to at least go in and be a game manager. And I've just been disappointed in what I've seen from him. You know, he's had three of the five starters on the offensive line in there. So it's not like he's, you know, playing, you know, behind a bad offensive line, but it just some of his throws, some of his decision-making hasn't been very good. There's been times where, you know, the pick that went to LeJonte Wester, I don't think Wester really helped him out there. It kind of looked like he could have got up and tried to make a play on the ball, but it just hasn't looked overly great. So, you know, I felt a little disappointed given they paid a decent chunk of money to them. So that's really what it is for me. It's more about the cap allocation. I think they're paying them $6 million, or maybe I'm completely off on that. But, you know, could it have gone elsewhere?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's been kind of overblown. I mean, one, he's on a two-year deal, so I think it's 2 for 6 with a couple more million incentives. And I looked this up earlier. He's like the 50th highest paid quarterback in football. So let's say there's 32 starters, and I'm not very good in math, but that means he's 50th. So that means he's paid average backup quarterback money. I think he's an average backup quarterback. And I think that's pretty much what we've seen. I think the decision-making, I don't think has been as good as it needs to be. I absolutely agree with that. I also think he's given some young wide receivers chances to make plays, and they've kind of let him down at times. I thought that first interception against the Colts, Dayton Wade didn't make a play on the ball. He got just pushed around. I thought that Wester interception the other day against the Cowboys, he got manhandled and he didn't turn around and they got physically bullied. And then I thought the Rasheen Ali interception was clearly not Cooper Rush's fault. It hit off Ali's hands. So I would like to see him make better decisions. I thought at the beginning he is an upgrade over Josh Johnson. I still believe that. I would like to see a little bit better, but I also haven't been discouraged by him at all. I still think in the long run he gives you a better chance than Josh Johnson. And one thing I see Cooper Rush doing a lot more than Josh Johnson is pushing the ball down the field, giving his wide receivers a little bit more of a chance to make plays. And obviously that's led to a couple picks. So the decision-making has to be better. But, you know, he kind of is what I expected for the most part. I think he's pretty much an average backup quarterback in this league.
for the sake of timing, we'll shift gears to running back, because we are literally going running position by position. And you might be sitting out there thinking, right, as a viewer, like, well, why are we even talking about running back? Well, did you hear John Harbaugh's comments within the last day or so entertaining the idea of keeping four? We know who the locks are: Derrick Henry, Justice Hill, and of course, Keaton Mitchell, who is back, who's seemingly back, even though he is banged up at the moment. Jeff, I'll swing it back to you order-wise here. You had some comments pre-show. Rasheen Ali is the second-year player, the former fifth-round pick out of Marshall, if I'm not mistaken. Do you see him making this team from a special team standpoint? Would he be your primary kickoff return guy? What do you think they see in him so far through a couple weeks?
Yeah, I think he would be their number four if they take four. I think Rasheen Ali's had a solid camp. Not been entirely clean. We've seen some, you know, we saw the drop that led to the interception. I know there's some question with blitz pickup, but he I think overall he's in the plus category when you talk about performance in camp. You know, and a big thing for him is staying healthy, because we never saw him healthy as a rookie. And we all saw in the beginning of last year some of the number three running backs they rolled out when Keaton Mitchell, I mean, like John Kelly, I think Chris Collier was in that group. There's a couple more. So I have no problem if they keep four, you know. And I think a big part of it is Keaton Mitchell's been banged up. It's not just the knee, he's had the hamstring. And he returned to practice this week, which is a very positive sign. But he's not 100% yet. So I think, Ali would be a little bit of insurance, you know, and it's going to depend on other roster moves. I don't think this is in pen. I know what John Harbaugh said, but if you read the entire quote, there was a caveat there. Like, as of now, plans change in the league late before cutdown day. So, you know, if it comes to another position where they feel like they can't afford to expose a guy to waivers, I don't think Ali is out of the woods yet. I really don't. I think it's probably looking good for him at the moment, but there's still some football to be played, some days before they have to make a decision. And, you know, it may be a four running back lean right now, but I don't think that's set in stone one bit.
I definitely respect the need for running back depth. You know, I remember the days of Latavius Murray and Devontae Freeman, Lord help us all. And so, you know, having some competent backups is definitely not a bad thing. But to be honest, I was surprised. I was surprised to hear, and you're right, he did add the caveat in the quote, but I was surprised just because there's a lot of very promising young defensive players that I could see factoring into the special teams competition. And I just don't see Rasheen Ali doing that. So basically by keeping Ali, he's just going to be your weekly game day inactive, because he's not going to play a key special teams role. And you kind of have it set where Henry's your bell cow, Keaton Mitchell's going to be your change of pace, and Justice Hill is your third down back pass catch specialist. So I guess I just didn't really see the fit to declare him. And is really Rasheen Ali going to be that highly sought as a practice squad guy where he'd get signed onto someone else's? Like, I just don't see that. And then I look at the kind of the other thing I wanted to take a look at too, is they have two guys on their roster that have been, you know, they're not guys that are going to go out and get you a bunch of yards after contact, but Miles Gaskin and Dearness Johnson, you know, they're very much like Latavius Murray and Devontae Freeman, right? Like they'll get you what you block for, and, you know, they can play responsible football. And, you know, I kind of see them as the practice squad guys, maybe not both of them, but one of them. You know, I'd probably almost lead towards Gaskin because he has some special teams return ability to him. So there's a little bit of value there. But, you know, I always liked Johnson when he was in Cleveland. I think he runs hard. And again, he's the guy that, you know, if you block for him, he'll run through contact. And, you know, I think he'd look a lot better with the starting offense. So, you know, I just didn't see the value in it. You know, if you end up putting Ali and Johnson, for example, on special or on practice squad, and one of them gets claimed, well, you got the other one. So I was just surprised because of, and we're going to get into the defensive roster crunch, because I think it's more pronounced than folks seem to think. You know, I see everyone like Okoye's making the team, Jay Higgins making the team, Ruben Lowry's making, and then you kind of start crunching the numbers and you're like, all these guys can't make the damn team. And the fourth running back really starts to complicate it. So that's really my perspective on it.
No shortage of carries for Dearness Johnson. I'm guessing that's going to be the case as well this upcoming preseason finale.
Yeah, like Jamal Lewis out there.
Yeah. Yeah, Bobby, real quick. I mean, every team in football has a running back that they want to keep, but they pass their waivers. Like, it just every year there's an extra guy, and running backs, the supply far equals the demand. Far exceeds the demand. So I would be surprised if any of their running backs got claimed.
Let's move on to something that seems like a pretty darn sure thing, and that is the wide receiver room. Cole, we'll throw it back to you in just a second, but I think we all feel pretty good about, you know, a 6 wide receiver position room this upcoming season, and it's pretty obvious, right? It's Zay Flowers, it's Rashad Bateman, both of whom are playing complementary football with one another, and maybe, just maybe, they both flirt with a 4-figure receiving yard seasons, both of them, instead of just Zay and Bateman being north of 700 as they were last year. After that, it's DeAndre Hopkins, the acquisition in free agency, of course, D-Hop, Lamar, and Derek, the long-awaited trio that I know a lot of you have been anticipating over the years, or maybe you never anticipated that. You never thought it would actually come to fruition, but it has. And then after that, the likes of Tylan Wallace and a couple young guys in Devontae Walker and LaJonte Wester. So, Cole, I ask you, in recent memory, this has got to be one of the more deep and talented wide receiver rooms, particularly in the Lamar era, maybe the most. And I don't think that's saying anything outlandish.
Yeah, I think it really comes down to your opinion of where DeAndre Hopkins is at this point in his career. I'm much higher on him than I think the general consensus, and I'm willing to live with that. But, you know, when I went back and watched his tape last year, I think there's still some meat on the bone. And I think folks forget that he went through last year through training camp in the first couple weeks. He was hurt, so he didn't have a normal offseason. He didn't go into the season healthy, and from all accounts, he's been relatively healthy this offseason. He's been able to get into this offense, and I'm a big fan in when I'm building an offense, I want to be able to do everything, and I think the Ravens, once Isaiah Likely's back, they've really done that. They can go 12 heavy with Patrick Ricard. They can go 12 light with Isaiah Likely and Mark Andrews. They can go 11 personnel with Hopkins as a true X, Bateman as a Z, and Zay as a slot. Like, the more this offense can configure itself in just about any way. They can go heavy with Derrick Henry. They can go light and fast with Keaton Mitchell. Like, the options are really endless for what Todd Monken can do. And I think the wide receiver room is playing a big role in that, because I think Zay, Bateman, and Hopkins all complement each other so well. All three have a diverse skill set, and it's really going to come down to, can D-Hop still play above the rim? Can he be that 50-50, you know, it's 3rd and 5 and Bolden's going to make that insane catch against the Patriots in the playoffs? Can he be that kind of guy for Lamar Jackson that he is sorely needed in the playoffs? And I think he can. And that's really, if you disagree and you think he's washed, well, then you probably disagree with me, and that's fine. But I just think there's still meat on the bone with DeAndre Hopkins, and that's why I'm so excited about what he's going to bring to this offense.
Hey, Jeff, you returned to practice today. How do you look out there?
He didn't practice a whole lot, but he looked fine. I think, in a perfect world, you want him out there taking a lot of reps with Lamar and getting on the same page. He's had some nagging stuff, but I also think there's a sense of he's a pro. He knows what it takes to get ready, and we're not going to push him now. We're going to save a lot of his bullets for the regular season. So, yeah, I mean – it's been a while since there's really no questions about who's going to make up the receiver room. I mean, usually that could take a show all up, an hour show all in itself, just talking about the wide receivers. I mean, the biggest question with the wide receivers is who's going to be on the practice squad, really. And if you keep 6, I don't know that you need more than 2 maybe on the practice squad. That would seem to be plenty if you have 8 receivers in the room. I think you try to keep one of the veterans, whether it's Kirkwood or Anthony Miller, on practice squad. And I think maybe a guy like Dayton Wade, you try to bring back, has youth on his side a little bit. They're pretty much set there. I will say this, though, guys, and I he's a learning, and I think, especially as a receiver, Wester didn't play very well the other night. And we saw another drop in practice today. It's kind of been interesting. He's caught punts really well, and he made 3 good decisions in the Colts game, too. So he's looked really comfortable catching punts, and wide receiver, though, has been a bit of an issue with his hands. So you want him to be clean Saturday, not to put any doubt in anybody's head, make the right decisions on punts and start hauling the ball in, because you don't want him to be battling confidence with his hands heading into the season.
On to tight end we go. We appreciate you guys for being with us. Over 250 concurrents. If you could like the video, subscribe to the channel, hit that notification bell. This is episode number 3 for us. We're approaching 2,000 subscriptions and kind of getting narrowly close to that second threshold for watch hours in order to monetize this thing so we can send it to the moon. So needless to say, thank you guys for being here. It's our position by position breakdown 1 week out from the deadline for 53-man roster projections. Not, I mean, we're talking projections, but the cuts 1 week from today. That's the 26th, 4 p.m. Eastern across the league. Jeff, we'll stick with you as we talk about tight end. And obviously, we have to hone in on Isaiah Likely. He successfully underwent that foot procedure just a couple weeks ago. Where do you view, from a designation standpoint, how they might handle him? What are you hearing? I know he's been around the facility you had mentioned on last week's show. Where are his spirits at, and where's the conversation surrounding number 80?
Yeah, saw him today, actually. He was he ducked out of the team facility a little bit from the door and was just watching practice. So, you know, he's still been around every day. I think they're just going to, you know, I asked John Harbaugh about him yesterday. He said there was really no updates. Everything's coming along fine. Even if he doesn't play week one, even if they feel like he's unlikely for week one and two, I don't know, man. I think they're going to roll the dice and just keep him on the 53. I mean, you put him on IR, that means he couldn't practice until week five, and his first game couldn't be any earlier than week five. There's some important games week one through four, and if there's even an outside chance you get him back for week three and four, I think you roll the dice and give him all the time he needs. And it kind of reminds me, guys, of I think it was 2023, right? Marlon Humphrey had, I believe, his foot surgery as well. And there was exact same question. Would he be ready for week one? Probably not. How long he's going to take? Well, you know what? They kept him on the 53-man roster. He still missed the first four games. So as it turns out, maybe it would have been smarter to put him on IR. But I don't think they think of that like that. I think they think of it like, hey, this guy's one of our really good players. These games are important. We need to give him, you know, we need to keep a carrot out in front of him to say, hey, you know, keep rehabbing hard. We're keeping you on the roster. So whenever you're ready. So I think he's going to be on the 53-man roster. They still have, I would imagine they'll give him a good health evaluation. They still have a week to see how he's recovering. And they'll make a decision there. But even if it looks like he could be back in mid-September, you know, by week three, maybe, I think you got to roll the dice and say, look, we're rolling with this guy. We'll take three tight ends. If he's inactive, we'll use one of the, and we feel like we need another tight end for a game. We could always, you know, elevate somebody from the practice squad for that game. But at this point, I think you have to put him on the 53 and give him every opportunity to get back within that first 4 weeks.
Yeah, and there's really no tight end on, you know, and we've kind of seen it in the past, right? You remember Vovalek was making plays in the preseason.
He's still around, right?
Yeah, and there was a guy a few years ago, and I can't remember his name, and I just remember him lighting up the preseason. This was like, I think before, might have been like 2016, and he was just really good. A lot of people thought he'd make the team. I keep scrolling. I can't find it. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But, you know, we've had guys flash in the past at tight end, and that hasn't really happened this preseason. And so, you know, as I've been trying to play around with 53-man roster projections, I put Ricard with my tight ends, and I have the three without Likely, you know, Andrews, Kolar, Ricard. Who else am I adding? So, like, it really, it's not like someone's pushing, you know, him out of the picture. Not that anyone would put Isaiah Likely out of the picture, especially a UDFA, but there's not someone out there that, you know, could be that special teamer that could, you know, eat a couple snaps. So, you know, I'd prefer exactly what you're talking about to, you know, have the chance to bring him back. And you're right. Like, this September schedule is a gauntlet, and, you know, there's going to be a lot of emotion in that Cleveland Browns game in week two. I know it's the Browns, but you don't think the Browns are going to be chomping at the bit to ruin the 30th anniversary of Cleveland leaving the city to come to Baltimore? Like, I know that those guys weren't around 30 years ago, but I think that organization is going to be chomping at the bit to spoil that 30th anniversary celebration. So, like, every game in September is going to be a tough one. And Cleveland always steals one from Baltimore. So, you know, naturally, of course, it's going to be that tough game. So, you know, I think they want that opportunity to get him back. And like I said, it's all about the more you can do, the better. And Isaiah Likely and their 12 personnel, as much as I like Charlie Kolar, they're a lot better with Isaiah Likely on the field. Simple as that.
By the way, you guys, I actually got some messages from on social media from Browns fans talking about what a slap in the face that is, that they're celebrating their 30th anniversary with the Browns in town. And given the history in Cleveland, all, it's the first home game. That's why they're celebrating the 30th anniversary. This is their 30th anniversary season. So you celebrate it during your home openers. It's not really, it's not brain surgery here. I don't think there's any attempt to rub it in anybody's nose. It's just, that's the opener. So that's what
I just want to pretend it is simple. So that we can have the pettiness though.
Well, you got Joe Flacco. That's all we need. I mean, that game, the storylines are going to write themselves that game. It's, that should be fun.
And of course, the other one when you're celebrating a past Super Bowl title is against Pittsburgh, December 7th, week 14. Yeah. It's got to be.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
That was strategically decided upon, it sounds like, from an ownership front office standpoint, whoever makes those decisions. But, and oh, by the way, it wasn't all that long ago that we chatted about Kadir Ismail last summer, who's out with the Vegas Raiders, busting his butt throughout the summer. So that's something to keep in mind there, too, when we talk about tight ends. It's off to the offensive line, and you already know where it's going first here. Cole for Road Graders is all over this. Go check out his channel, guys. All kinds of film analysis, and he specializes in offensive line breakdown. So as we learned today, this is the elephant in the room that we have known the projected starting offensive line pretty much all offseason long, particularly when they extended Ronnie Stanley, who's going to be here for the foreseeable future. He has successfully rebuilt himself. Andrew Voorhees will start at left guard as he did last year before going down with an injury and opened the door for Patrick McCary, who closed it shut. Tyler Linderbaum is the centerpiece, as we all know, pun intended. We also know what the right guard dialogue
duck,
has been like.
Bobby, you got to duck when you say his name.
we also know that dialogue pretty darn well, don't we, Jeff? Your words garnered some traction, didn't they, on social media? Yes, I clipped that because I knew people would enjoy it. Daniel Fa'alele is your projected and now confirmed starting right guard. And, of course, rounding out from left to right, it's Roger Rosengarten, year two, after a pretty solid rookie campaign. Cole, first of all, any thoughts on that? And two, how do you see the room rounding out?
I mean, like, is anyone surprised? It's one of the – I remember I got a message a few weeks ago, and they were like, do you really think there's a competition at right guard? And my answer was no, but, like, I'm still going to advocate for what I'd want to do. But, you know, and Jeff and I have talked about this offline in the past, and like I know what the Ravens are going to do. It's just not what I would do, and that's okay. Overall, you know, I'll say something nice about Daniel Fa'alele. Had a good game last week. I thought he had a really nice game. You know, if he could do that in pass protection every week, I probably wouldn't have a whole lot to say. So you know, the big thing for me when you look at this offensive line, I think all the right guard focus has really taken some of the shine away from what Andrew Voorhees has done in this preseason. He's done exactly what I wanted to see Fa'alele or Cleveland do at right guard. He came in, he played sound. He didn't have a down rep, really. I think I clipped like two bad run block reps, and he's left no doubt. And that's really what I want to see out of these position battles. I want to see a guy just come in, grab the bull by the horns, and drive it into the ground. And that's what Andrew Voorhees has done. And I really think he deserves his flowers, so I want to give him that. Then you look at the right guard situation, and, you know, I went into ChatGPT the other day and I made a picture of Daniel Fa'alele riding a roller coaster. And then I decided not to tweet it out because I knew I'd get everyone upset. But that is the Daniel Fa'alele experience. It is a roller coaster. You'll have a rock solid game, and then the next week you'll have a down game. And he's doing what every NFL player does in their career. They're chasing consistency, and he's going to continue to do that. And it's in the Ravens' best interest to jump on board, cheer him on, and let's hope that he finds that. Then you look at the backup picture. Another guy that really deserves his flowers is Corey Bullock. This is a guy that came in, surprised a lot of people, including myself, you know, playing over Nick Samak early. And again, left no doubt. I have a DM from Corey. I reached out to him. He followed me on Twitter the other day, and I just said, you know, phenomenal game. Good luck next week. And his response to me just said, thanks, man, trying to leave no doubt this year. And like, what a mentality to have. And he has gone out, and just like Andrew Voorhees, he has done that. I really wish we could have got him in some of the right guard snaps with, you know, a Tyler Linderbaum, just see what it looked like. But maybe we'll have to park that for next year when Emory Jones is in that conversation as well. And then you look at some of the backups. I thought Joe Noteboom, I thought he had a down game last week. I'm definitely worried about the depth. But, you know, Jeff, looking around the league, how many teams could say if a starting offensive tackle goes down, things are going to get dicey? It's like quarterback. There's not 32 or 64 starting offensive tackles in the National Football League. So, you know, depth's a concern, but it's a concern for the entire league.
Yeah, I think John Harbaugh made some interesting comments about offensive line today that provide a little clarity of the decisions we're going to get over the next 7 days here. One was he hedged it a little bit, but he pretty much said they're going to take nine. And I think, you know, in a perfect world, when they're lining up with a roster, I think they like to go 25 on offense, 25 on defense, and the three specialists, right? Balance, flexibility. But I don't think that's set in stone. You know, there's been years where they've had 26 and 24. I think there may have been a 27, 23 year. So I don't think they go into it and say, we have to have that. But that's the preference, right? So I think when John Harbaugh said Ali will be a four running back, we're likely planning to go four running backs. People wondered, well, where do they get that spot on offense, right? If you're going to take six receivers, two quarterbacks, the three tight ends. And, you know, most people thought maybe they'd take 10 offensive linemen. They've liked doing that in the past, but John made it clear today that that's going to be really hard to do on this team. You know who their 10th offensive lineman is right now? He's Emory Jones, and he'll be there in week five. That's pretty much how I think they're going to look at it. So I think, now, probably a pretty good chance they take nine. The question is, who are those nine? I think we know the starting five. We know Noteboom's a swing tackle, so let's put him at six. And then there's seven, eight, and nine. Now, are we sure Ben Cleveland's a lock? I've been operating under that. I've put him on the team, and I know I'm going to get messages. I don't like Ben Cleveland. I hear you, but we've seen exactly how his career has gone here. So I think he's on the team because they have no other veteran guard. And I think you need a veteran inside guy. He's versatile. He can play center. He's even played tackle some. So he would be on my roster. I know that for sure. And I think he's going to be on this one. Carson Vincent, I think he's almost a lock. You don't draft a guy like that who you know is a developmental prospect and then pull the rug out from under him in 1 year. It's like, what do you expect? Like, you know, they knew he was a developmental guy. And they've needed a developmental tackle for a while that they could develop. And hopefully Carson Vincent's good enough to be their swing guy next year. If he has to play this year, I think that's going to be tough. But so I would assume Cleveland, Noteboom six and Cleveland seven, Vincent's eight, and probably Bullock. He's done more than enough to earn this job is nine, but that leaves out Dellinger and that leaves out Samak. So John mentioned they need to find their ninth offensive lineman. Who that guy is going to be today. So that tells me they've settled on eight. And who's the nine? I would have to think it's the four. Noteboom. Noteboom, Vincent, Cleveland, and Bullock. But hey, we've been surprised before there. I mean, I talked to some people in the organization that has really liked, Dellinger, you know, that they like him and they feel like, you know, ultimately he's going to be a pretty solid, solid guy in there. And obviously the Samak is a relatively recent draft pick. So, my guess is it's those nine, but if there's a surprise on this team, I think it may be along the offensive line and who's that ninth guy.
Yeah, I think that's really well summarized because it really comes down to when you look at the picture, quite literally the picture on our screen right now, it really comes down to a battle between Dellinger and Cleveland. And it kind of puts two organizational philosophies versus one another. And what I mean by that is They want to have experience and versatility. And I think Ben Cleveland's checked that box in the past where, you know, he's kicked out to right tackle and competed well there. He's played center and he competed there. And I thought he did quite well when he was put in those situations. He's played left guard and right guard. You know, I don't think you want him playing tackle, but theoretically speaking, he can play multiple positions across the O-line. But then Dellinger on the flip side, sure, he was a seventh round pick, but they usually keep their draft picks at least 1 year. So that's what I mean by the two organizational philosophies. You have the versatility piece versus the youth piece. And I'm just not sure which direction they're going to go in. At the same time, is Dellinger really going to be that coveted that he'd get poached off a practice squad? Yeah. Hard to say. So I personally think they'll go with Ben Cleveland. And this Ben Cleveland update is brought to you by Rave Kingdom. Shout out Rave. We'll move on to the defense.
By the way, I love the spelling of center, right? You know, the Canadian spelling of center. That's spectacular.
There are certain words, Cole, that definitely pop off on your social media, like favorite.
Someone spell color in the chat for me right now.
Hey, before we do switch sides of the ball, that is, Jeff, one thing to follow up on, I'm curious about, just because Emory Jones, you know, John has spoken about that as we've already alluded to. Do you think that like a red shirt year could be brewing here?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's missed so many snaps and it's such an adjustment for young offensive linemen. It's tough. And, you know, again, this guy's not just missed training camp. I've said it on the show the last couple of weeks. He's missed OTAs. He missed rookie mini camp. He missed mandatory mini camp. He hasn't played since college. So he'll be eligible to practice after week four. So he's, you know, but again, just because he's not allowed to practice when he's going to be on this NFI list. So yeah, there's ways you can get your reps. You can work out in the field house and do the different things. He's in on meetings. He's been in on meetings. So there's things he could do where once he gets on the field, he can, you know, he can pick things up, but nothing substitutes live reps. And he's starting behind the eight ball. There's no question about it. I mean, yeah, he's eligible week five, but I think it's going to be a while before we see him where they feel comfortable putting him out there. Just it's really hard on a young player to miss out on all those reps.
Certainly makes you wonder, too, how much, if it, any at all, familiarity they had with the medical in terms of the potential of this unfolding the way that it has so far.
Yeah, they said they knew, but I can't imagine they thought it would be this long. Like, and John Harbaugh has honestly said that to be, so I'm not exactly breaking news there. He's mentioned that, you know, the rehab hasn't gone as quickly as they hoped.
Yeah. On to the defensive side of the ball we go. But first, let's refresh where we're at in terms of likes, because that's what makes this channel go. We've got 340 concurrents at the moment with 121 likes. So needless to say, if we could beef that number up, we'd appreciate it, guys. Like the video, subscribe, hit that notification bell, and join us Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern from this point forward. On to the defense, let's go back to your graphic, Colts, because it's slick and it's a great way to showcase what you're all about in the Rogue Raiders world on YouTube. And let's see, whose turn it is. Jeff's had a little bit here, so he's on a good run. Let's go to Cole. Let's talk defensive linemen, and I'll let you take this in the direction that you so choose. I mean, obviously, Michael Pierce has retired. Brent Urban is back with this team. He's been a handshake deal in years past. How do you see this room working out just numbers-wise, first and foremost?
Yeah, I think this is going to be one of the tougher cutdowns, and this is where we get into needing to kind of have that full defensive picture. I think Adisa Isaac ending up on IR simplifies it a little bit, as much as obviously I'd never want to see a player get hurt. So that sounds a little harsh. That's not necessarily what I mean, but I, in the sense of going with five outside linebackers instead of six, that was one of the things I think they were going to struggle with, was who's your fifth and sixth and what do you do about six? So they're going to likely go with five outside linebackers. So then it becomes, you know, what do they do on the D line? Because the D line is always an interesting conversation, because you're only putting two on the field, but you want to have that depth and you want to have a rotation. So obviously Travis Jones, Nnamdi Matabike in your nickel defense, they're your one tech and your three tech starters. I don't think that's overly complicated. Brody Washington is going to maintain a role. Then it really becomes, who's that backup one tech? You know, because Travis Jones, we don't want him playing a ton of snaps. We saw what happened last year when he was hurt, and also when Pierce was hurt, where they didn't have a healthy rotation going. You saw his effectiveness get limited a little bit. So I think there's a lot of value in a backup one tech. And, you know, has John Jenkins ran away with it? I don't think so. Okoye flashes week one. Jason Jones flashes his week two. So what do you really do there? I think that's going to be one of the big decisions, is that backup nose tackle position. Do they just go with the experience of a John Jenkins because, you know, he's been around the league for so long? Or do they want to go with a young upside guy? I don't think they'll keep 3-1 techs. It just doesn't make sense to me. I think it'll be just one. So then that means, you know, are you keeping three techs? So Madubuike, Washington, and then Peebles is going to be in that spot. So there's your five. But then what do you do with Brent Urban, who I think's, you know, come back and he's played well, and he factored in quite a bit last year where he was, you know, playing snaps and he was making plays. You know, I used to always tweet them. He's a Canadian, so obviously he's a guy that I've followed his entire career. And you know, it's not just playing lip service. He makes plays consistently, but he also could be a guy that he probably wants to be in Baltimore. He likes the familiarity. So, you know, maybe he's your practice squad stash and he's got some call-ups and they go that route with Brent Urban and they go with five defensive linemen. But then you look, okay, CJ Ravenel, because he's flashed. And this is where I think it becomes such a tough decision, because so many of these defensive linemen have made strong cases. So I think this is a tough decision. But ultimately, and we'll kind of get there in a minute when we talk about inside linebackers, corner, and safety, I think they have to go five defensive linemen, and it's going to make one of those difficult cuts. And I would expect they go with Jones. I'm really struggling because I really like Okoye. I'll say Okoye, but I understand they'll probably go with Jenkins, and then Madubuike, Washington, and Peebles, and there's your five.
Yeah, you know, I think six is a possibility. Five is more likely. And, you know, a couple things at play here. One, this is I think this has been the best performing position group in camp this year. I Okoye is a young guy who they didn't know much about. It's probably been a revelation this summer. But a lot to learn. He's still raw in a lot of ways. And I think he's the ideal guy you'd like to get on the practice squad, because I think with another offseason and a year in the program, I think he could be a legitimate piece for you next year. But, you know, if somebody else likes him, I mean, interior defensive line is probably the position I would not be surprised if someone poached somebody off waivers from the Ravens and they didn't get a guy. So I feel like they have eight guys who can make a case to be on this team and who kind of deserve it. You know, obviously the, you know, Travis Jones, Madubuike, Broderick Washington, and Jenkins has been fine. He's been what they expected him to be. And that's four, and Peebles is going to be on there. That's five. I mean, you know what Brent Urban does, and he still looks the part. He still does what he's asked, and he's a well-respected guy in that locker room, who's sort of a wise voice in that locker room that they like to have around. And Ravenel, for two straight summers, has impressed me a lot. I think he's an NFL player, and by that I mean a 53-man player. Works hard, plays hard, you know, can get some penetration. But I just don't know where the spot is for him. And then I would say Okoye is the other guy. So the other point on this, guys, I think, is we know the Ravens love roster gymnastics. They love to, you know, is this a spot where they just go four and they say to John Jenkins, look, we'll keep you. We're going to, you know, he's a vested veteran, so he's not eligible to the waiver process. So, look, we're going to release you, but we want to re-sign you for the practice squad. We'll elevate you the first couple of weeks as our fifth defensive lineman, and then we'll add you to the practice squad. We'll add you to the active roster later in September when the roster picture is more clear. Because when a guy, a veteran like that, is on the roster week one, his salary's guaranteed all year. So we've seen Ravens in the past release some of these vested veterans and not have them on the roster in week one, and then bring them back on the practice squad and ultimately add them a couple weeks in the season. So if there's an area where there's roster gymnastics, I think it will be here. I could definitely see that. But on the surface right now, I think the five are, you know, Madubuike, Washington, Travis Jones, Peebles and John Jenkins. But I think Jenkins is a guy to look out for if they do one of these handshake deals. And I also think, you know, this could be an area where if they feel like, you know what, we don't need four running backs, we're fine with Keaton Mitchell. He looks good over the last week. Let's take a sixth defensive lineman and let it be a young guy who will not get poached. So we will make sure we get at least one of these guys in the roster and not expose him to waivers.
And quickly, Jeff, just the Brent Urban discussion. Yeah. Is he sort of the type of guy where game day elevation, it's that point in the career. He's already been doing that a little bit here and there in recent seasons. Where does that factor?
Yeah, out? I mean, look, Brent Urban's a total pro. He's done it before where he's done the team a favor and he's sort of gotten released. I think he's gotten released on cutdown day two straight years.
That's right.
And then signed 48 hours later with the team. And he jokes that he loves it. He gets a couple of days off from practice and he can go home.
A good Canadian lad, eh?
Yeah. He's got a beautiful family. He can spend some time with his family and he comes back ready to go. So, yeah, I mean, look, Brent Urban signed in mid-July. So I think well past mid-July. He was an in camp guy. He wasn't there the first day. I think he probably knew the dynamic and knew where things were on the roster. And I'd have to imagine the conversation's been had with him at some point. Look, if we don't have space, would you be willing to come back? And we see as being on this team, just perhaps not for week one or week two.
All right, there you have it. Defensive lineman. Let's shift gears here to linebacker. And as Cole has on this graphic, we'll kind of steer in the right direction between Mike and Will. And maybe we begin with, I know you probably want to talk about Jay Higgins, Cole, and his pass to making this 53-man roster. He's the undrafted rookie out of Iowa. He's been balling out. The tape bears that out for sure. But we should probably start with Jake Hummel, don't you think? Because if you go back to March, you let Chris Board walk. You let Malik Harrison walk. And you signed Jake Hummel pretty early on in the process from the Rams to be sort of your ace and maybe a rotational guy inside. Is he a lock in your mind at this point based on what he's done so far this summer?
I have a video coming out on Jay Higgins and Teddy Buchanan tomorrow that kind of recaps last week. And I made the point, and I'm really interested to see if I get agreement on this or not, because I was comparing Buchanan and Higgins, but obviously they're not competing for a spot. But my point of doing this was, I think Jay Higgins' case to beating out Jake Hummel, as weird as it sounds, is Jay Higgins being the third linebacker, not factoring in special teams. But if Jay Higgins is looking better than Teddy Buchanan as a true linebacker behind Rowe and Trent Simpson, I think that gives him a better path to the roster than if he was flashing on special teams. Teddy Buchanan's going to be on this team. We know that. He's also taking a significant role in special teams, and his skill set fits for special teams. So it really makes me question, do they need the ace special team guy in Jake Hummel if you're going to get that from some others? So it's one of those complicated kind of roster questions, because my point of it has been, if I look at peer performing linebackers, Jay Higgins has played better than Teddy Buchanan. And I will factor in that it's been against different competition. You know, it's been Teddy playing first, second quarter, Jay coming in the second half against lesser competition. But in terms of physicality, the way he's engaged in the run game, you know, he had a forced fumble last week, an interception the week before. So he's been a playmaker. I think Jay Higgins has looked like your third best linebacker on this team. I don't know how you keep him off the roster. And so the trade-off would be letting go of the special team ace. I personally, we'll talk about it here in a minute with corner and safety, I think you can live with that, because I think you have some other guys that can take on those special team roles. But that's not denying Jake Hummel's special teams ability. That's what he was signed for. And that's why I think it's going to be such a difficult decision. But when you get into the numbers, I really don't know if they can keep five linebackers, if they also need to keep five safeties. And there's also a potential they need to keep seven corners because of, you know, all the options they have there. So that's really how I'm looking at it. But I'm a big, big, big Jay Higgins guy. Like, this isn't just, you know, sure, it's preseason, but you know, you'll see very cleanly in the video I put out, Teddy Buchanan, if a lineman gets his hands on Teddy, he's washed out of the play. Jay Higgins is much more physical. He engages contact and he does it in a way where he's going to pop a lineman and then slip into the gap. And I think that's going to translate no matter who he's playing against. It's just his style of play that fits a lot better. So I know I'm hyping the heck out of Jay Higgins, but you know, he's put it on tape and I've just watched the tape to tell y'all what I see.
You know what's amazing, guys, that we've gone this far and we haven't talked about special teams' impact on the roster. I mean, until this question. And that fifth linebacker spot, if they keep five, the fourth linebacker spot is a special team spot. The fifth linebacker spot's a special team spot as well. The guy who's best on special teams is going to be on the team. And that's the thing. I mean, that's what makes it difficult. And that's also why I bring up another name for you. Chandler Martin, the undrafted rookie, you know, on that list out of Memphis, he's in the mix here. He's right there with Higgins. I know people don't want to believe it, but he's right there because they like him on special teams. And so I wouldn't dismiss him anyway, or I wouldn't dismiss him, you know, at any point yet. I think they'd like to keep him around for sure. I think Hummel's on this team because they target him as a special teams linebacker. And they lost three special teams linebackers last year, Bobby. You mentioned the two, and you also have to add Christian Welch in that list. Technically, you know, Jake Hummel's your Christian Welch. You know, they still have to replace Board and Harrison special team snaps. So this is an interesting position group. The top three are set. I assume Pummel's four, and it's if they can take a five. And when you break down the roster a little bit, it's probably not this simplistic, guys, and we're going to get to this at safety. But I think this very easily could come down to one spot for Jay Higgins, Chandler Martin, and safety Bo Braid. And they'll take the one they feel most comfortable with on special teams because those last couple roster spots on the 53 are devoted to keeping your top special teams players. So I think that's where it comes in. You know, Higgins has done a really nice job. So has Martin. You know, this guy looking at Iowa. All-American in the Big Ten. He's not sneaking up on anyone, Jay Higgins. People know who he is. So obviously, if he's on the waiver wire, people look at his film and do this and that. So sure, it's a risk you lose him. But as I said, I think they like the other undrafted rookie too. So they'd be comfortable getting one of those guys back and feeling good about it. And the last point I'll make on this, guys, to move things along, you look at their other position groups, and there's just not a lot of special teams guys on it. Like, you look at wide receivers. You have one guy who's going to play special teams in your wide receiver group. Now, Wester will return punts, but he's not running down covering kickoffs or punts. You have Tylan Wallace. That's it. At, you know, outside linebacker, Tavius Robinson's the only one in the whole group that really plays special teams. You know, you need special teams guys, and I think people are going to struggle to accept that, but every team does it, and I think that spot is going to be heavily influenced by who they like best on special teams. And frankly, I've been watching this team every day for the last month and a half, or it feels like 6 months, but however long training camp's going on, I couldn't tell you who's better than Chandler Martin and Jay Higgins. You know, that's really in, you know, that I don't know enough about the intricacies of it and all to determine that. But I think it's going to come down there between those two and Bo Braid at who they feel most comfortable with on special teams.
The way you just put that, is there a more enticing position group out really the entire roster? Why? That's going to be a hell of a shake down the stretch. And you're not kidding about Jay Higgins. How about the resume? Big Ten linebacker of the year, you mentioned, yeah. Jeff, last year. Unanimous All-American and a first-team All-Big Ten selection in 23 and 24. They've gone to the Iowa well before. We'll see if they choose to do it.
And you're missing the most important one. He's also the third best inside linebacker on the Baltimore Ravens right now.
You have made that clear.
I got to make my case.
You have made that clear. Let's shift gears. We're heading to the secondary in just a moment. But first, outside backer, we learned recently this week that Adisa Isaac, the second-year player out of Penn State, is likely going to begin the season on IR. That dislocated elbow turned into, after further review, ligament damage. That's a problem for him. What a bummer. Hamstring really set him back his rookie season, and now the elbow comes back to bite him right before his second season. So we know that from a roster standpoint. That lead, and I believe, Jeff, I saw a tweet that Malik Ham got nicked up today. So why don't I throw it back to you? Your thoughts on the room, where David Ajabo factors in. Does he have more to prove coming up this upcoming weekend? And we obviously know the locks in this room too, if you want to throw those out there.
Yeah, sure. I think that was one of the biggest questions heading into cutdown day. Do they keep six? And if they don't, what happens to David Ajabo? But that, you know, unfortunately for Idisa Isaac, now you're talking about a second straight potentially lost year for third round pick. And, you know, that's just tough. And he does it either, I forgot what it was, a punt. It was either covering a punt or a kickoff, which he was going to need to do as the fifth outside linebacker. It helps when you play special teams. So we're back to that. But, yeah, it's a shame. He's at least not going to be out. Probably, you know, will be out till midseason at the very least. But that creates another spot. And I don't think they want to quit David Ajabo until they actually have to. And they love the kid. They still have hope that the occasional flashes will become more consistent. I would imagine he's going to play a ton on Saturday against the Commanders. And, you know, that room, I would be surprised that, you know, if they go four, I think it's five. I think Ajabo was in the fifth spot behind, you know, Van Noy, Owe, you know, Tavius Robinson and Mike Green. So I think that's your five, and the Adisa Isaac in question, the injury, unfortunately answered a major roster question for them.
Yeah. I don't want to waste time on it. Yep. I think this one's pretty wrapped up, so I'm keeping an eye on time.
Beautiful. Yeah, no. And then that kind of brings us to the secondary and the note that you alluded to, you know, a little while ago. There's obviously been, already this room has been depleted based on what they did in April. They lose Robert Longerbeam, as we discussed last week. They lose who I saw just on Instagram today, had successful surgery. They lose Bilal Kone. We know safety Ardarius Washington tore his Achilles in a conditioning session earlier this offseason. So, Cole, why don't you just expand on what you mentioned earlier on that you were teasing about seven?
Yeah, I think when you try and break it down to pick the numbers, it gets really tough because, you know, Keon Martin plays an important role in the sense that he's a slot guy, right? So he's kind of your backup to Marlon Humphrey. And, you know, I tweeted earlier, but how much does he look like? Oh my God, who's the guy? Who's their slot corner from 2 years ago? Arthur Millett. Jesus, sorry. How much does he look like Arthur Millett with his ability off the edge? You know, so I think, you know, he played early in the game, which I think is always very noticeable. He was kind of the starter at the nickel, obviously with Marlon Humphrey not playing. So I have to assume he has a role in this defense, and being that kind of a, you know, first up as the backup nickel, I think it's a big role. So then it comes down to, you got your four and Wiggins, Awuzie, Jair Alexander, and TJ Tampa. Who am I missing?
Armour Davis. No,
the fourth was Marlon. Sorry. Then it comes down to Jad versus TJ Tampa, because that would be your 6-7, right? And I don't think either have really shown anything to not make this roster. So it just becomes who comes off to go on. You know, is there an injury that happens that takes care of it for you? But I don't know who they take off to go with six. So that's really where I'm struggling. You know, it became a lot clearer when Cone and Longerbeam got hurt. Obviously, again, we don't want to see anyone getting hurt, but it kind of cleared that up a little bit. But I see seven guys worthy of a roster spot, and it's hard to justify cutting any of them. If I'm to pick one, it'd probably be Jalen Arvor Davis just because of his injury history. But I also think he's played quite well when he's been in this preseason. So, you know, I'm not cutting him on performance. Like that's where I'm struggling.
Yeah. I don't think they're taking at least six. And it's the question is, do they take seven? And Martin, I think, would be that seventh. It's kind of remarkable that everybody, we're all talking, and I wrote it quite a bit, that it was going to be very hard for an undrafted free agent to make this roster. There's a decent chance that three are on a defense alone, you know, that they could get three undrafted rookies on. I think between Keon Martin, Ruben Lowry, Higgins, and Chandler Martin, the inside linebacker, I think two of those probably make it on, and possibly three do. So it's just unbelievable. I think if you have room for seven, I think you need to find them. I mean, I was at practice yesterday, and Jair Alexander hasn't practiced since August 9th. And while they think he's going to be okay, this is a guy that's – the injuries have been constant for him. So I think that's why he was available. That's why you got him for as cheap as you did. Uwuze, another guy who hasn't been able to stay healthy, was watching practice in street clothes today and wasn't out there yesterday. Wiggins wasn't taking reps because he was a little banged up. Jalen Armour Davis was sick. Now, it's just too many guys, man. I mean, that's a position they have such a hard time keeping guys healthy. Tampa was a little banged up in today's practice. So it's been the one position that guys have kind of been coming and going all summer. I think, you know, your six are Marlon Humphrey, Wiggins, Alexander, Uze, Armour Davis, and Tampa. And I think there's a decent chance that they take seven and Keon Martin makes a team. But I don't see any way. It would be almost really difficult to take seven corners and then turn around and take five safeties as well. So you may have to make a decision between the seventh corner being Martin and then that fifth safety likely being Braid. You know, those are going to be those guys in that discussion if you go 11 DBs or 12.
Yeah, and one thing, the graphic is wrong. I'm missing. I tried to add in Washington and make him red so that he was still factored in there, but I forgot to add Lowry back. So Ruben Lowry is not currently in the graphic if you guys are watching on YouTube, but he should be. So that's just a mistake by me. But I think, you know, Lowry showed that he's basically the backup free safety to Starks, I think. And then Hamilton and Kane again being a key special teamer is really kind of or getting that role. The thing that's interesting about Bo Braid though is his skill set. I find no one's going to replicate Kyle Hamilton, but his ability to move around the defense, Bo Braid is the other safety that I think replicates that the best. So I like him as kind of the backup to Kyle Hamilton and more of a versatile role. And he has taken on a key special teams role. So this is what I meant by this roster crunch. Getting the numbers in is really difficult right now. And I just don't like, I don't want to see Bo Braid not on the team. I think that would really stink to not have him on here, but I don't know who you cut. Like this is the decision between Martin and Braid. It feels like a really real one. And I haven't really seen Braid's not done anything wrong on film. So I'm not criticizing him from that perspective. Like there's never been a moment where I'm like Braid's killing us. But it just comes down to keeping depth at the corner position that I think needs to be a priority with the injuries or the injury prone guys that Jay-Z, you know, laid out there. So I think this cut in the DB room, when you look at it as a whole, is going to be very difficult for the Ravens to make.
Jeff, based on what he did last year, I mean, how much does that factor in? Where do you see him in this final crunch?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think from a pure safety perspective, I think Lowry's probably passed him, right, as the number four safety, and with Kane being the number three. We've seen Bo play nickel a little bit, Bo Braid being used in the nickel, which is probably advantageous because I think he's better near the line of scrimmage. But it's always ominous when you see a player who you expected to be on the team playing in the last 10 snaps of a preseason game. I mean, for a guy you expected to be on there, he's not a veteran, he's in his second year, but he's a returning player, to be out there for the last 10 snaps on defense, that's when you start asking some questions. Like, look, he's obviously not a lock if he's playing at that point. So you're sick of hearing it, but special teams, man. And I think Bo Braid is one of their better special teams players, and that should get him on the roster. But, you know, that also means likely losing one of those undrafted free agents, whether you're talking about, you know, Higgins or Keon Martin. And, you know, it wouldn't shock me if they prioritize one of those guys over him. I don't know. He's been on special teams, the first team special teams all off season, all the practices. So that's going to ultimately get him on the team, I would think. But he's in a dogfight at the moment.
As this entire final crunch will be the 26th, a week from today, 4 p.m. Eastern. For those of you asking in the chat, is the deadline for NFL rosters to be trimmed from 90 to 53. And before we jump here too, I mean, the Jair Alexander conversation, Jeff, as you noted, is garnering a whole lot of reaction just because of his history, which is also something that you mentioned. August 9th feels significant, like you said, since the last time he practiced. It's also important to remember that, what, he's less than a year removed from the PCL tear.
He
had his knee drained the first week of camp. Harbaugh's being super vague about what it is right now. The same could be said for DeAndre Hopkins, that he was vague on him. But as you mentioned earlier on, he returned to practice today. And when you look at that injury history over the last 4 years, just 32 games played for Jair. Now, he's not being compensated to come in and essentially light the world up. But for him, looking at this from a personal standpoint, he's going to want to put film on to take one more bite at the apple, you would think, this time next year.
Yeah, I would have, and I think you would have liked to see Uwuzie and, Uwuzie and Alexander maybe get some snaps in a special teams game, not special teams, in a preseason game here, they have not played a lot of football. Like, I think, what is it, 7 games or fewer in 3 of the last 4 years for Jair? Or it's similar for Uwuzie. They just haven't been on the field a lot. And I think let's be clear. The Ravens knew what they're getting here. They knew it was going to be a challenge, both health-wise. That's one of the reasons they got both of them. Like, you hope that you could piece together both of those guys and have them available as often enough. But you almost needed another guy in place of Uwuzie if he can't stay healthy. And we know Armour Davis's history staying healthy, and TJ Tampa was not healthy last year. So there's a lot of injury questions. That's going to be the position to watch when it comes to injuries. And I don't think anybody's shocked that Alexander's had to miss some practice time. I mean, this is why they got him at the price you got him for. This is why he was available by the Packers, despite the fact that they didn't have a ton of quality cornerbacks and they may have taken a financial loss on him.
And if you follow the beat community over there, or the content community, or whatever it is that keeps popping up on my timeline in the Packers world, they're like, told you so far, but hey, again, it's very early, and this is not a surprise whatsoever. Just to echo what you said there, Jeff. Help me out here, guys, with the memory before we sign off. Have we been over 400 concurrents, north of that?
Nope. This is groundbreaking. Let's get it to 500 plus next week. Seriously, folks, for all you guys tuning in, the active chat, I always have it open here in the background so I can kind of chat in with you guys and watch. Like, just thanks, guys, for all the support. This has been so fun, and building a nice little community here. We absolutely love it. So thanks, guys, for joining us, and just super excited to keep building this.
I'll say this too. Likely next week, we're going to have a chance to build in Super Chats.
Yeah,
I know you, Cole, you had already kind of mixed that up in the live chat earlier on.
I got to explain to Jay-Z what a Super Chat is.
Absolutely.
Oh, isn't it great when
he's
we're in the
group chat? Jeeves what a Super Chat is.
I love when we're in the group chat, right? We're going back and forth on back-end business-related items that Jeff obviously just doesn't – he's not privy to them, right?
Because you guys take care of that. That's why they pay you the big bucks.
Yeah, Jeff's just come here and talk. The fifth safety is going to be.
Yeah, I'll come here and talk. Yeah, exactly. I'm going to keep pumping up Chandler Martin.
Yeah, right. And Cole, you got Jay Higgins in the meantime, right? But no, in all seriousness, that will be fun to get more of an interactive feel, I think.
Yeah.
And so likely, if you guys watch this episode, even those of you who didn't catch us in real time, and that reminds me that it'll be available tomorrow, as it always is, the day after, in the audio space, which is great. We want to shout out Borna and his team for turning this stuff around, repurposing episodes. If you guys haven't noticed, the best of, if you will, like 5, 10, 15 minute segments have been repurposed in the days that follow this live stream for those of you who enjoy shorter consumption habits. So Super Chats to come, more interactive experiences to come. We appreciate you guys. Episode number 3 is in the books. We'll be back with you on the 26th. And by that time, God willing, at 8:00 Eastern on the 26th, we will have a 53-man roster to officially talk through. And maybe there'll be some surprises, as we already kind of forecasted tonight. So for Jeff, Cole, I'm Bobby, signing off from this Tuesday show. Hope you guys have an awesome week. Enjoy the final preseason game, of course, down in